The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan. Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the beautiful Missouri Ozarks, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to our humble bunker, everybody. It's, let's see, what's today, the 17th?
17th of January.
January!
Yes, and...
Named for the god Janus.
And a little chilly out here. Winter has finally arrived, but thankfully no precipitation in the forecast, which is a good thing because,
because it would probably be snow or sleet.
Yes, and Josh and Christina Peck are on their way to the Ozarks to join the team.
It's not good. You know, honestly, things will never be the same, and I mean that in an absolutely positive way. I am so excited about their joining the Skywatch TV team. Josh is going to – he's really going to round out the panel on our Sci-Fridays. Mm-hmm. He's going to have – later down the road, he's going to have his own show and going to do lots of research. And Christina's going to be helping out. She'll eventually be, I think, one of the panel members on the Skywatch Women TV show. So
yes.
Lots going on.
And we know how they feel, having wanted for a long time to the two of them to go into full-time ministry. And thankfully, Tom and Nita Horn are making it possible.
So, amen to that. And we know how they feel at this very moment in time. Very excited. But looking at a mountain of boxes tucked inside of a truck and knowing you got to hit the road tomorrow morning. So please keep them in prayer.
Well, they may already be on the road now. I guess it depends on when Joe gets out there.
I think he was going to get there this afternoon.
So. Okay. So, well, they may get a start on it today. But in either case, your prayers for safe travel for the Peck family and for Joe Horn, who is out there helping them out.
Yeah. So. Well, what I read was, what he told me, actually, personally, was he was going to fly out, stay overnight, and then they were leaving early the next morning. Mm. So since he was going out there today, I'm assuming they're leaving tomorrow morning. But we'll have him here by midweek. And
Tuesday.
Joy.
So I'm going to try to clear the decks for Tuesday.
If they leave Monday morning, that's quick.
Yeah, make it a two-day haul.
They're coming from – no, if they leave tomorrow morning, that's Monday. Then getting here and working on Tuesday, that's not going to happen.
No, they're not going to be working Tuesday. Saying. They're arriving here Tuesday afternoon.
Oh, okay.
So
you were saying clear the decks over at the warehouse. So
I will be, so I can go over there, wear my box-carrying clothes and help them load stuff
literally
into their home.
The decks.
Yeah,
We need transporters. You know,
just beam them over. That would really be awesome.
Well, we suggested that. In fact, I suggested that they just, because she'd posted this picture of all the boxes. I said, look, just, email me all
boxes.
Your pictures.
Yeah.
And I'll print them out.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that work?
That would.
The day is coming.
Email the boxes.
The day is coming when that will happen. You email, you know, exactly. Here's the box and everything in it. And we'll just use the 3D printer to print it out.
So, sort of the Star Trek transporter.
Sort of.
And they're already doing some proof of concept things. So they found through the strange action of entangled pairs, what Albert Einstein called spooky action at a distance, where they can change the state of a particle in one place and see it reflected and confirm that it happened somewhere else.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's still very, very primitive compared to what a transporter beam would do, but that's generally the idea. It's just you have to do it with lots and lots and lots of particles.
Yeah, well.
Particle man, particle man. Yeah.
Well, there are lots of stories to talk about because we haven't been on for a while. You know, there was one really interesting story that is something we talked about a few years back when Alexander Litvinenko died. He was murdered in England. He was dosed with polonium 210, and he died, I don't know, maybe a week or two later. And, well, it says here he doesn't give me – died on the 23rd of November of 2006. It's been a long time ago.
Yeah.
I hadn't realized it was so long. Well, since that occurred, there's been an investigation ongoing, and finally – later this month, the results will be revealed. And apparently the leaked information is that it's going to be revealed that Litvinenko was about to reveal to people in the UK the connection between the Russian mafia and Vladimir Putin.
Ah, I see.
Oh, I'm sitting here going, and what else?
Yeah, I mean, that,
blink, blink.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like enough to kill him over. I think it's been pretty well known here in the West that when Russia supposedly democratized under Boris Yeltsin, really what happened was that state-owned industries were privatized in the hands of certain oligarchs and the Russian mob.
Yes,
and what Putin has managed to do is either work well enough with the Russian mobs or was able to apply enough state pressure to renationalize certain assets such as Gazprom, the state-run energy company, and maybe some other things. But yeah, this doesn't seem not much of a wow.
No, it really isn't. I expected way more than that, but yeah. It's being spun in the media as if it's a major announcement. And I'm, like I said, when I read it, thought really interesting, but I expected more.
More of a wow. Yeah. Other things coming out of similar note, Judicial Watch released an email about a month ago that it received it, that it obtained under a Freedom of Information Act request. And it's got relevance again because of the release of the movie over this weekend, 13 Hours, the Michael Bay film that documents what happened in Benghazi.
Right.
And what the emails document that Judicial Watch obtained was that there were, in fact, contrary to what the government told us, we just didn't have any military assets that could go to the aid of the men working at the consulate in Benghazi. That's just not true. It just is not true. The military had said, look, we've got these assets, and those were blacked out, redacted in the copies that the Judicial Watch received. But there were military assets that were available. And they were just waiting on State Department approval.
Well, that's not the story that's all over the news today. The CIA saying that scene where these assets were told to stand down never happened.
Yeah. Well, they were spinning up, according to the and that's a quote from the email that I saw. But they were waiting on official State Department approval. You see, in the United States, the military just can't act unilaterally without the civilian government. And thankfully, our military has restrained itself from stretching beyond those bounds. The men in the military, and they're not men and women, they're not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. You get some guys who are playing the same type of office politics that you see in any big company. You know, guys who try to get ahead on their own merits, and others who get ahead because they're really good at kissing butts. But still, I think for the most part, our military has ingrained in it a very strong sense of its place in the constitutional order of the United States. In other words, I don't think we have seen anything close, and I'm going to contradict myself here in a minute. We have yet to see the military just finally stand up and say, we're sick of this.
Days in May.
And a 7 days in May scenario, and just say, this is it. We're sick of being controlled by civilians who don't know what they're doing, and we're just going to take over. Now, having said that, there was a story that came out, and I don't know if we've talked about this because it has been about several weeks since we've done a program, that the military, and this was a story written by Seymour Hersh, who is a long-time career as an investigative journalist, but who's pretty much ignored inside the United States anymore. His work is published at the London Review of Books. He's the guy who won a Pulitzer Prize, I believe it was for his work on breaking the story of the My Lai massacre in Vietnam.
I can look that up.
But he did a lot of work on that, and that was where he really became first known. So we're talking about a guy who's got a journalistic career that extends more than four decades. He wrote...
My Lai.
Okay. He wrote that the Pentagon was so disturbed about the policy direction of the Obama administration regarding Syria back in 2012 and 2013, in spite of warnings from the Defense Intelligence Agency, which warned the White House that if you keep arming these rebel groups in Syria, like Al-Qaeda in Iraq, then you're going to create a situation in which one of those groups will set up an independent Islamic State that will destabilize both Syria and Iraq. And that's exactly what's happened. And that, in fact, was why U.S. Ambassador Christopher Stevens was in Benghazi. He was essentially overseeing the transfer of weapons from the stockpiles accumulated by Muammar Gaddafi after his death, transferring those from Libya to the rebels in Syria. They were running them to a port in Syria where they would get to the hands of the rebels. And essentially, Al-Qaeda and Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups in Libya decided to, for whatever reason, take out the Americans. Maybe they wanted the weapons and we were buying them up and getting them out of the country. I don't know. But that was what was going on. Now, Hirsch's story said that the military, the Pentagon, decided because they had no chance, they determined, to try to counteract Obama's policy on Syria, his policy of regime change for Bashar Assad, that they would start sharing military intelligence with their colleagues in Germany, in Russia, in Israel. And the hope was that their military intelligence guys would share that information with the Syrian military, and that Bashar Assad and his colleagues in Damascus would be smart enough to use this intelligence about the locations and capabilities of rebels in Syria to stay in power. Because the military essentially was saying, look, if you depose Bashar Assad, you'll have the same kind of failed state there that you have in Libya, that you essentially have in Iraq.
Yes, but this time it'll work.
Yeah, exactly.
Was probably the answer.
Exactly. We didn't do it right before. Socialism has never, ever worked in history, but that's because they never did it right before. And we almost wound up with a similar situation in Egypt, except in Egypt, the military under el-Sisi did seize power and depose the Muslim Brotherhood. So anyway, the military was concerned that we were going to wind up with another failed state in Syria of radical Islamists, and in trying to prevent that, essentially did an end run around the Pentagon. Now, please understand that that is very, very close to a 7 days in May scenario.
Very close.
The Joint Chiefs of Staff opposed the White House policy in Syria, and they did everything that they could short of just telling the White House, we are not going to carry out your orders. Yeah, I mean, that's very, that's as close as you can get to.
It's chilling, and it's something that the American public was totally unaware of at the time. I believe more will come out about it. I'm convinced that Cy Hirsch is going to write more about this.
Yeah.
If you want to read this article, it's an in-depth article. It's almost 7,000 words. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's at lrb.co.uk. Just look for the January 7, 2016 issue.
Yeah, I'll put a link to that in the show notes at pidradio.com. But yeah, that was as close as you can get to treason without crossing that line, I think. But again, here in the United States, the media has ignored the story, and what little attention it has paid to Seymour Hirsch in the last few years has basically been to try to destroy his character.
Yeah. Well, that's often how it works. If you don't have a genuine defense, you know, that is rational and has real bullet points to it, then you use bullets to take out your enemy. Honestly, there is now, and we've talked about a little bit about Russia already with the Litvinenko story, but honestly, there is a proxy war taking place.
Yes.
And in many ways, you know, the West is blanked.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, don't, please, Putin, don't get mad at us. All right, we'll back down. So it's difficult to say what's going to happen now with the proxy war that's taking place with the United States. Normal ally of Saudi Arabia, Saudi Arabia very angry at what we're doing with Iran.
Yes.
In fact, it was today that officially the sanctions for oil and gas products were taken down, were removed by the stroke of a pen, the executive order that was signed by President Obama. Iran now has no longer an embargo on those products.
Right.
However, more embargoes still exist on other things because of other problems that relate with Iran. But Iran, praise God, released six seven.
Four that I knew of.
Well, anyway, they released some of the – I think they released – more than four. Four were part of the deal, but I think they released several others.
That's right. That's right. And one probably the best known is Pastor Saeed Abedini.
Yes, praise God. He's coming home, or he may already be back home. But this proxy war may take all sorts of prophetic directions, and one of those may indeed include nuclear weapons because Russia has those. Iran may be getting those. Pakistan has decided that they will side with Saudi Arabia, their traditional ally. Pakistan is nuclear.
Right. And the Pakistani weapon has been known as the Sunni bomb.
Because they paid for it.
Yes, the Saudis helped pay for it. And they do have nuclear-capable missiles from China, the Saudis do. And it's kind of understood that the Pakistanis would supply the warheads if and when the Saudis ever decided they needed to go nuclear. And I've received some comments because I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. A general in Pakistan 2 weeks ago who was hosting the deputy crown prince and Saudi defense minister, Mohammed bin Salman, who's the 30-year-old son of King Salman,
mm-hmm.
Favored son, who's taken a much tougher stance militarily since coming to power as the defense minister.
And isn't King Salman rather old? Isn't he in his 80s?
He, I think, was 79, but there's some question that King Salman may be in the early stages of Alzheimer's.
I remember
there were
reading
some
that
rumors,
as well.
Rumors of that anyway. But Prince Mohammed was in Pakistan taking a tour of certain defense facilities. Okay. Certain defense facilities there. And this general in Pakistan said, if Saudi Arabia comes to any harm, we will wipe Iran off the map. So that led to a really interesting, or a couple of responses. A couple folks said, well, you need to talk to Avi Lipkin. And, you know, we've met Avi Lipkin mm-hmm. at the prophecy conferences. He gets down to see Gary and Bob down at Prophecy Watchers on a pretty regular basis. Mm-hmm. I do need to get in touch with him. Avi maintains that the Saudis currently have their hands on nuclear warheads right now. Others say that, well, no, it's sort of this arrangement they've got with Pakistan, where Pakistan will supply the warheads anytime the Saudis call for them because the Saudis wrote the checks. Either way, you've got the Sunnis with nukes. You've got Iran trying to develop nukes. It's a convoluted situation. Here in America, a lot of conservative commentators believe Iran wants to get a nuclear weapon so they can destroy Israel. And I think there are a lot of reasons to believe that that's overstating the case. Mm-hmm. Now, Iran is a state sponsor of terrorism. I'm not saying that the Ayatollahs are good guys. They want to destroy Israel over time, but they understand that if they destroy Israel with a nuclear weapon, they will be nuclearized about 5 minutes later. And they don't want to be the rulers of a bunch of radioactive sand. So,
well, I think that that's wise.
Yeah, the Iranian Ayatollahs are not stupid. They've got nice houses, nice cars, wives, and they don't want to lose all that stuff. One way to do it would be to nuke Israel.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be dead shortly thereafter. The other way, but this is also the reason that they probably aren't as eager to see the Mahdi arrive mm-hmm. as the Sunnis. The Sunnis believe they can jumpstart the apocalypse and bring the Mahdi to Earth and then, you know, wipe the rest of us kafir off the planet. The Ayatollahs are sort of like the Sanhedrin in Jesus' day. If the Messiah really showed up, the Sanhedrin was out of a job.
Well, that's a good point, and that may be one of the areas of contentions between the Ayatollahs and Ahmadinejad, because he was
yes.
very vocal about calling on the Mahdi to arise then.
Correct, and there's an Iranian general who's quoted in the news this weekend as saying something, the Mahdi's appearance is very soon. But the difference between the two approaches is that the Shias in general believe that they're preparing the way for the Mahdi,
mm-hmm.
just as we Christians believe that we are preparing, doing the best we can to prepare the way for Jesus to return. But Orthodox Christianity does not teach that we can speed up the time clock of his arrival by one heartbeat.
No, we cannot.
And Shias believe the same. Mm-hmm. Whereas Sunnis believe, yes, they can provoke. They're sort of like the dominionists of the Muslim world.
Well, let me move to another group that is trying to provoke something with the refugee crisis taking place in Europe.
Yes.
There's a group in Finland called the Soldiers of Odin.
They are not happy.
No, they are not. And this is just one of many grassroots organizations that mm-hmm. are rising up. And they're being called ultra-right wing
right.
groups. But the truth is, they want to keep... It's like Hitler all over again. They
yeah.
want to keep racial purity. They want to protect their women. It's understandable that they would want to protect their women, especially when you see something that took place in Cologne, where women were essentially gang raped by
yes.
large groups of men.
Yeah, a lot of sexual assaults that took place in the New Year's Eve celebration in Cologne. And as word got out, it found out there were similar events, although not on the same scale, that took place in Frankfurt, in Hamburg, in Helsinki, Finland.
Mm-hmm.
And what really made people there angry, I mean, it was bad enough that the police lost control of the situation. They were completely overwhelmed. They used the same policing plan that they used for New Year's Eve last year. You're always going to have some idiots that get too drunk and get rowdy and, mm-hmm. and sick or whatever, but they didn't anticipate gangs of dozens of, as the victims described them, Arab or North African men mm-hmm. roaming around and sexually molesting women. The police were unable to help because they were shorthanded. They were overwhelmed. They just couldn't cope with the situation. But worse than that was when people found out in the days that followed the event that the media was actively
downplaying
yeah. the identities of the mm-hmm. people involved. The German newspaper Bild revealed that an official with the Frankfurt police said that official orders had come down from authorities saying, do not identify the groups of these people or do not identify any crimes committed by these people. They're trying to hide apparently to minimize the political damage to Chancellor Angela Merkel,
who's
been pushing for this open borders thing to bring all of these refugees in.
Yeah.
In Sweden, people are furious. They found out that there was a concert in July in Stockholm with a group that appealed to teen girls and young adult girls, you know, 12 to 17, 12 to 18, Arab men, mm-hmm. North African men, going through the crowd at this concert, molesting girls as young as age 12.
Apparently, this is something that is socially acceptable to young Arab men. When
right.
they are in large groups and they feel like they have safety in numbers, they will start to touch inappropriately
yes.
whatever young woman is nearby.
They just have a very different mindset. I was doing some reading on this last night. A psychologist who's worked with Arab Muslim men—I shouldn't identify them ethnically, but religiously Muslim men in, mm-hmm. in Denmark—and said it's just a fundamentally diametrically opposed worldview mm-hmm. to our worldview in the West.
Yeah,
we in the West are generally speaking trained not to do what they are allowed to do in their own societies. And frankly, I think the situation is getting to a point with these Soldiers of Odin, the ultra-nationalist far-right group Pegida
yes,
in Germany is attracting all kinds of new followers. The Front National in France attracting a almost 25% of the vote in their recent elections. I think this is going to continue to grow, where you're going to see one of several things happen in Europe. Number one is either civil war between groups like the Soldiers of Odin and the immigrants. Number two is people embracing fascist government in order to crack down on this type of behavior mm-hmm. and just say, okay, we'll stay, we'll let you stay, but the police are going to have to adopt a almost military bearing in order to go in and pacify these no-go zones that exist in so many European cities. Or number three is just mass deportations.
You know, none of those is a good choice.
No.
This is being reflected not only in policing behaviors, but also in poll numbers, because if you look at the Brexit poll, which actually the vote doesn't take place, I think, until 2017, but the early polling on that for a long time was trending toward, no, we want to stay in the EU. It's finally now, the majority now want mm-hmm. out of the EU.
And Brexit meaning the vote for Britain.
British yeah. exit right. from the EU. That's Brexit is a term that you see in the UK papers all the time, which I love to read because, honestly, if you want to understand what's going on over there, don't read the American, you know, reporting on it. Read the British mm-hmm. and see how they see it. But many of the Brits, especially in the wake of what happened in France and also what's going on in Germany and the Baltic, not the Baltic states, but, well, actually to a certain degree the Baltic states, but also in Finland and mm-hmm. Sweden, they don't like it. And they're seeing large numbers of refugees come into their neighborhoods. And it's honestly, it would be very difficult if you've got a young daughter at home
yeah.
and you fear that young men of teenage age that have nothing to do, don't speak your language or understand your culture, that your child is suddenly in danger.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah, progressives have apparently this idea that, and I've read this being referred to in a tongue-in-cheek manner as the magic dirt theory of social integration, that somehow you can magically, you just take somebody from an area where they've got a long history, a long religious and tribal history, culture, mm-hmm. Worldview, transport them into a new place like Europe or North America, and somehow this magic dirt will transform them into people who are happy and willing to integrate into a Western, more secular society.
That takes generations to happen. And in the meantime, in the meantime, many horrible things can take place on both sides.
Yeah.
And that's why if this continues from the refugee standpoint, if they don't begin to police themselves, they will find themselves in a civil war with their hosts.
Right. It's a very simple formula. Diversity plus proximity equals violence.
Yeah.
That's history. That's just history 101.
Well, I'm going to bring up a story that is a total left turn from this, and it's if I can find the story. There was a this I find really, really disturbing. There was recently a Facebook page shut down because a mother discovered that her son's picture was on this page of beautiful teen boys.
Oh.
And the person who had put up the page and constructed it claimed, this is, again, don't know if this is true, but this person claimed that these photos were all ones that he had personally taken in his journey around the world. So either he has traveled a lot and her son's picture just happened to be one that he put up there, or he's grabbed pictures off the internet and put them on this page. But anyway, it has been taken down, so I'm very glad for that.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just one example of the kinds of things that can happen when you post pictures of your kids on the internet or they selficize themselves on the internet. These are not just for their friends to see. The whole world can see those and do with them whatever they choose.
Yeah. I'll direct you back to the interview on A View from the Bunker that I did with Opal Singleton just a week or two ago, director of millionkids.org, which is a reference to the number of children per year that are drawn into sex trafficking. Technology is giving them an interface to the world that is mobile.
Mm-hmm.
How many of our kids above the age of 10 have a smartphone or a tablet or an iPod or all some combination of those three? Probably most of them here in the West.
Well, and what's disturbing about these pictures is if they were put up, doesn't matter who put them up.
Right.
Very likely they had geotagging or some sort of metadata inside the photo that those with the knowledge could extract and know where that photo was taken and where that boy is. 11,000 users had liked the page before it was taken down.
Mm. Yeah, and that's something that we don't often consider. We just see a cute picture of the grandkids and think, oh, this is great. I'll share this around. Well, that's fine to share with family, but just bear in mind when you're putting stuff up there, you're often, as Sharon pointed out, also sharing data you may not even be aware is connected to that photo.
Yes.
That can be traced by those with the know-how to do it.
But even if the geodata is not in there, if you put enough information up there, someone can actually figure out.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Where that child goes to school, where
you?
The child lives. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's frightening. It's a whole new world. And
well, it's a whole new technology for a very old sickness.
Yes. And again, it's giving them through that little screen on the smartphone or the tablet or the iPhone or the iPod or whatever. If it's connected to the internet and the kid, there was a study that Opal Singleton referenced. She said that something like 90% of teens go to bed with their phones. American teens go to bed with their phones and they're texting through the night and sharing selfies and Snapchat and Instagram. But
my eyes are rolling over here.
Exactly. Because what that's doing is that is putting a connection to the outside world in your child's bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And they may well be in contact with people that you would never let inside your front door.
Exactly. Take the phone away from them before they go to bed.
Exactly. It may cause a fight, but it's a fight that is worth having.
Think of this way. The internet can be wonderful,
yes,
but it also can provide a catalog for pedophiles.
Exactly. And that's how they're using it. And Opal Singleton's website, millionkids.org, you should bookmark it and look at it. She's putting together a catalog. Maybe that's not the right word, but a wiki of apps that are being used by predators to stalk kids. And she suggests a really good practical advice. Your children, your teens have phones. Sit down with them with the phone and say, look, I don't want to spy on you, but I need to understand how your phone can be used and what's on there. I want you to go through this with me and teach me what these apps are for. In other words, don't make it like a, you're going to do this or else, but try to make it a collaborative event. Let's learn this together. Mm-hmm. And her goal is to assemble a wiki of apps and show how they can be used by predators. Because she was naming, you and I are pretty tech savvy, but she was naming apps that I'd never heard of before.
Oh, I know. We're so out of it when it comes to it.
Yeah.
But as you say, we're probably much more informed than the average parent.
Right. And that's what really gave me a chill, was understanding that, hey, as savvy as I think I am, I was clueless about these apps that she said are the ones being used most by predators to get in contact with victims and to begin grooming them.
Mm-hmm.
Because your 13, 14-year-old may think that she's chatting with a 15-year-old boy in the next town over, when in fact it could be a 39-year-old pedophile.
On the same street.
On the same street or across the country. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fact is, the people on the other end of that cell phone may very well not be the person your child thinks they are.
Exactly. So. But here's the other thing. Even if the person is on the other side of the country,
right,
he or she could still be a danger to your child.
Yes.
Because that child is being groomed for a reason.
Right.
Sadly, it is a fact that those who like to consume in the pedophilia world, who act as that, who want, they literally put down, this is my list. I want a boy that looks this age or a girl that looks this age. I want blonde. I want blue eyes. I want dark hair. I want, you know, dark skin. There is a list of preferences, and there are finders out there.
Yes.
Who spend their entire lives making money by finding the children that match.
Mm-hmm. And this is also a way for pimps to draw young women and young men into a life of prostitution.
Yeah. Yeah.
Luring them in through what's called shame-based behavior. You get a photo texted to you from what you think is your girlfriend on the other side of town, and she encourages you to send a very personal selfie. Next thing you know, you get an email saying, you know, this has been put up on this website and seen by 20,000 people, and unless you do what I tell you, your parents will see it. Your friends will see it. Everyone at your school will see it.
Yeah.
And next, you know, and that's how
that has happened in real life.
Shame
many times.
Based
over.
Behavior.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, total left turning once again. And I'm jumping in there. The story that I just want to talk about, really, we've mentioned a few times on Skywatch Radio, Skywatch TV.
Skywatch Radio. That's an idea.
Well, you and I have talked about that before. Tom just goes, mm-hmm. I don't know, radio. Anyway, we've talked about 2015 making a big change in the world of robotics and AI. 2016 is really the year that everybody says it's going to be the breakout. This is when the technology goes, it just does the whatever the
exponential.
The hockey stick curve. It suddenly goes up exponentially. And there's an article out today by someone who actually works in this field. And he literally says that we may be looking at a Terminator scenario if AI robots are not curtailed now.
Hmm.
If we don't really, and this is again, if you honestly think that a Terminator scenario is a possibility, then let's just stop the research entirely. No, no, we won't do that.
Right.
We'll figure out a way to make them safe.
We'll make them out of flubber. One of the issues, and again, this is where the technology is so far ahead of where our minds are.
And where policy is.
And where policy is.
Yeah, exactly. There need to be regulations in place now.
Yeah, there's a group out there that with a website, stopkillerrobots.com, that is trying to educate people about the threat posed by what are called lethal autonomous weapons systems, or LAWs. Essentially, they don't look like Terminators. They can look like little tanks or drones or whatever, but they're weapon systems that don't require the presence of a soldier. You just have somebody controlling a joystick, you know, hundreds or thousands of miles away, sort of like our drones.
Yeah, but that's not actually autonomous.
Well, right, right.
True autonomy.
Controlled by an AI, correct.
Yes.
So you've got the –
would
the Chinese,
that they were controlled by joysticks. No, they get to make the decisions in the field on their own based on an overarching command.
Right. And the Chinese have already introduced something like that, and the Chinese military, it was announced just a couple of months ago, have already started buying some of these things, which they said they'll be used for internal crowd control and things like that.
We're just going to use it to sweep up at night.
Yeah, it's like a giant Roomba. But this is could pose an existential threat. You build enough of these and grant them enough autonomy, and yeah, they could be a real problem.
I just realized that Roomba is broom in Pig Latin, almost.
Yeah, umbre. Umbre.
Yeah, sort of. Oh, anyway. Okay, that's kind of crazy. But yes, those who are working in this field, you talked earlier about the 7 days in May scenario and where military leaders would at some point say, look, we've had it. Your policies stink. You're going to get us all killed and we're going to say no. Now imagine an autonomous robot that doesn't have to say no.
Mm-hmm.
It just knows I get to do whatever I want.
Huh? Yeah.
Whee!
Yeah, and the world would be a lot better off without all of these people. These humans are causing all the trouble, all the fighting. So let's just wipe them out and the animals will be happy.
There is a dystopian television series called Colony that just started on USA Networks. And it takes a lot of current day science and tech capabilities and incorporates it into a fascist regime mm-hmm. that is after some arrival, the arrival.
Yeah.
Remember when the arrival came in?
They talk about the hosts.
The hosts, which in my post to you Facebook this morning about it, I said, I don't know that it's coincidental that they're called the host because the heavenly hosts.
Yeah. The host in biblical terms means an army.
Exactly. The army of heaven, of God.
Yes.
The heavenly host. So the fact that they're called the host may not be coincidental, but there are a lot of problems that I have with Colony. It could be better. It could be better done, but it's chilling in that it does use drones and massive surveillance systems that go even beyond what we see in Person of Interest, which mm-hmm. has been one of our favorite shows. So I'm curious to see where Colony goes with that.
Yeah. One other thing I wanted to bring up, because and this circles back to the Sunni-Shia conflict that we were talking about earlier. There are a number of eschatological views in the world. Among Christians, professing Christians, you've got a number of different views, you know, pre-trib, post-trib, no-trib, whatever. In Sunni Islam, Shia Islam, they've got different expectations. Mm-hmm. For Shias, the Mahdi will be returning because he was here previously. It's the 12th Imam.
He's been in occultation.
Right. For fighting. Sunnis, it will be his arrival.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of like the difference between Jewish expectation of the Messiah, he's coming for the first time,
mm-hmm.
and Christian expectation of the Messiah, he's coming back.
Yes.
So there's a difference there. But in Jewish prophecy, we've seen over the last year a surprising number of declarations by Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox rabbis of the imminent arrival of the Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and Chris White is the one who put me onto this, so hat tip to Chris White, that their expectation of what the Messiah will look like, combined with what the Muslims expect to see with the Dajjal
mm-hmm.
and their version of the Mahdi, combined with what Dominionists think end times prophecy look like, because they believe we have to conquer the world before Jesus can come back. He can't mm-hmm. he can't return until we conquer the planet.
It's a works-based.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think all of those false prophecies are going to fit together like puzzle pieces
yeah,
and lure most of the world into this deception. But there's another prophecy that was just published this week. There's a news site out there, breakingisraelnews.com, breakingisraelnews.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I go there every
day. And they write a lot about prophecy, especially coming from these rabbis. There was a new one I'd not heard of before, which is taken from a collection of rabbinic commentary called the Yalkut Shimoni, which was believed to have been written in the 13th century, so in the 1200s, going back 800 years ago. They believe that, and I'll quote now from the English translation from the Yalkut Shimoni, the year that Melech HaMashiach, or Messiah the King, mm-hmm. will be revealed, all the nations of the world will be provoking each other. The king of Persia, Iran, will provoke the king of Arabia.
Ah!
And the king of Arabia will go to Edom,
mm-hmm.
possibly in the rabbi's views, the West,
mm-hmm.
meaning us, to take counsel. But the king of Persia will in turn destroy the entire world. The nations of the world will be outraged and panicked. They will fall on their faces and they will experience pains like birth pangs, et cetera, et cetera. So we saw that prophecy, mm-hmm. Another prophecy earlier that said that when the Russians take Crimea and then see them at the gates of Constantinople, mm-hmm. which is Istanbul.
Yes, exactly.
With the growing tension between Turkey and Russia, There are rabbis who are saying, ah, see, this is another sign. Don't leave Israel. The Messiah is imminent. His Messiah's arrival is imminent. This is another prophecy they're pointing to.
I think those are fascinating. Just to make sure our listeners don't misunderstand, we don't give 100% credence to these.
No.
We just think it's really interesting to, again, PIDs, peering into darkness. It means we look at the stuff that the enemy is trying to make us believe.
Right.
So it could be that there's something to this, that the enemy, this is sort of a peek into the enemy's plans.
Yes.
It's hard to say. Before we go, I just want to... one last caveat, and that is, I mentioned earlier the show Colony. I want to make sure everybody understands USA Networks does not necessarily put on G-rated shows.
No.
You may find objectionable scenes and themes within Colony and many of the shows that are on television now that are in prime time.
Yeah.
And during when our kids are up. So as good adults, we have to be judicious about what we allow kids to see.
Absolutely.
And if you as an adult want to watch these adult themes, that's up to you. But I'm a big believer in kids, while they're bed, you know, record it and watch it when they're in bed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
We don't even let Sam watch them.
No, he gets too
disturbed. He's very upset.
Yeah, yeah. He wants to go out and bite something when he sees this stuff. And so,
can't say I blame him. In fact, there was because we had recorded it, and that's how he's watching it, there was a scene that was actually an intimate scene between a husband and a wife, so mm-hmm. that's fine. But it was as far as I was concerned, it was like, this isn't advancing the storyline at all, and I'm not sure I would have written it that way anyway. So I fast-forwarded through the whole thing, and even on fast-forward, that scene took a while.
Yeah, you're making the point that they love it one another. Okay, yeah. That's fine, but when you get beyond a certain point, it's like, okay, now you're just doing this for the gratuitous.
But that's the great reason to DVR it, then you can fast-forward through it later on.
Exactly. The X-Files coming back to TV fairly soon.
I know.
Speaking of TV,
curious to see what all, there have been some teasers that have revealed, you know, some of the storylines, so we'll see exactly where it goes, but...
And I need to get Brian Godawa on both View from the Bunker and also on Skywatch TV to comment on a trend that we're seeing in entertainment this year, because there are some other programs coming out this year. This appears to be the year in which the Antichrist has been declared cool by Hollywood, because you've got the program Lucifer coming mm-hmm. out soon, which portrays the fallen angel as the very hip, suave, and funny and charming owner of a nightclub in Los Angeles who helps the police solve their cases.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And then there's another one, which I watched a little bit of the other night. It's a new comedy starring Jane Lynch, who was one of that group from
Best in Show.
Best in Show. And
she was also in
Waiting for Guffman.
Glee? Was it
Glee? Glee is probably what she's best known for. A very funny comic actress starring in a new series called Angel from Hell. And she shows up and befriends a young woman, and this young woman can't decide if she's actually a really inept guardian angel or if she's just a crazy person. But Angel from Hell, another program coming to you. And there's another one that's I'm forgetting off the top of my head. I'm sure listeners have already figured out the other one. But there seems to be a pattern this year where promoting anti-heroes from the supernatural realm is now acceptable on primetime American television.
Yeah. Well,
what does
sadly,
that say about our culture?
Well, I think it says a lot, and I'm sorry. You know, I was listening to the radio the other day, and this person who was the host of the show said, okay, in just 4 words, can you describe the state of our nation today? And I said, yes, going hell, handbasket.
Right down the drain. Yeah.
Yeah, right down the drain would work. Yeah, well, anyway. Praise God, the Lord, He has plans for us, and they are plans for us for the better. You need only accept Christ as your Savior, and now is the time to do it.
Amen.
Before it's too late.
Yeah. The Lord said that following Him would not be an easy path, that we would face tribulation before the end. Regardless of where you place the rapture, there will be tribulation.
And that's as a world, as the church body in general. It doesn't mean every individual has to go through.
No.
Every individual is going to walk that path that the Lord has chosen for him or her. And the truth is, some are harder than others, but there's this old saying, and I think there's a lot to it, the Lord never gives you more than He has designed for you to take. So if He is putting you through something, He's got reasons for it, and He will get you through it.
Mm. Yeah, just sometimes you wish the Lord didn't have so much faith in you. But,
at those times, though, honestly, He's carried me through it. He literally has carried me through a lot of stuff.
Grace sufficient for the day.
Amen.
Yeah. Well, this week on A View from the Bunker, Benjamin Baruch, first-time guest. He's the co-author of a new book on Russia and its threat and its appearance in prophecy.
Well, that's very timely.
Yeah. So the book is called The New Tactics of Global War. And that'll be posted later tonight, Sunday the 17th. And coming up on Wednesday, a friend of ours that we haven't talked to in a long time, Dr. Frank Thayer.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a new book out about the Aztec UFO incident in March of 1948. A flying saucer supposedly crashed up in the Four Corners region there, northwestern New Mexico.
He spent years investigating this. This isn't something he pulled off the internet. He and his students, he's a journalism professor, emeritus mm-hmm. now,
yeah.
They put this together.
Well, and he got a couple of other collaborators, Scott and Suzanne Ramsey, who've also been working on this for quite some time. Scott Ramsey, in fact, started working on this in 1985 when he was an outside sales rep who covered that area. And so he was traveling around New Mexico and some in conversation, one guy said, "Hey, yeah, that's out by the old UFO crash site." Like, what? So that's how this book came to be, but it's doing well. And Frank is a good man, interesting fellow. So that'll be posted up.
And this week on Skywatch TV, Tuesday?
It will be.
Carl Gallops?
No, it is Dr. Let's see, this week is coming up the 19th. It's Joel Richardson, right. Second part of our discussion. This will be about the Abrahamic Covenant and why it still applies today.
In case you're sitting there thinking, why don't they know who's on? Didn't they just talk to him? No, sometimes we talk to guests months ahead of time. So, yeah it's like it's kind of interesting because you need a flow chart to figure out what color is my hair at the time. and what how much – what is Derek wearing suspenders or is he going to wear a jacket in this one?
Yeah, it's a good interview. Joel Richardson was really fascinating to talk to. And so you'll enjoy that one. That will be Tuesday night on – Skywatch TV, which is on the Christian Television Network at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time here in the United States. And if you can't watch it on satellite TV, you'll see it on the Roku and YouTube channels later in the week.
That's right.
Until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content copyright Gilbert House and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out.